Back in March of this year, Dave Roberts, he wrote an article for the Phelps County Focus about one of the Rolla High School basketball games. Now, it was titled, "Can You Believe It? Rolla Rallies from 20 Down in Second Half to Win District." And he explained, Rolla High School's boys basketball team needed perhaps the greatest comeback in the history of the RHS gym to keep its season alive and move on in the Missouri Class 4 state tournament playoffs Friday night. And he went on to explain how in the last few seconds of the game, well, they made a three-pointer and they actually won. Now, I don't normally watch basketball, but I really wish I could have been there for that game. Many people really love a good comeback or when the underdog wins. I mean, how many books, how many movies are based on that theme? For example, Disney has made a lot of sports movies through the years. And I went on one website and it listed 60 of them, Disney sports movies. And I realized that, well, I've actually seen most of them. And guess what? Virtually all of them are based on that theme. See, it often does our hearts good when we see someone prevail against the odds or we see someone get back up after they've been knocked down by the difficulties and the tragedies of life. Well, that is the story of the book of Ruth. It's a comeback. So if you haven't already, let's be turning there. This is another one of those stories that really shows us the truth of Romans 8:28. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And we can see that God cares about ordinary people and families, not just about whole nations. Well, before we begin, we need some background. Well, at the Feast of Harvest, also known as the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, the ancient Jews would read the book of Ruth, and that seems to have been done because much of the story is set in the harvest fields, and many Jews still do it today. See, this book, it's a Hebrew short story. It's named after its main character, Ruth. Now, she's a woman from Moab who ended up becoming the great-grandmother of King David, and it's considered by many to be just one of the most beautiful short stories ever written. There are no laws, no miracles, no wars, no car chases. It's just the domestic affairs of one particular family. This book, it shows an old widow's transformation from despair and emptiness to happiness and fulfillment through the acts of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Now, the name Ruth, it sounds like the Hebrew word for friendship. And she definitely proved to be that for her mother-in-law, Naomi, a great friend. Well, as the book tells us, these things happened in the time of the judges, before the period of the kings. See, the last judge, Samuel, anointed the first two kings, Saul and David. Well, this was a period of religious and moral decline. There's national disunity and foreign oppression. Immorality, idolatry, wars, both internal and external, they were common. And that's why it's sometimes said that Ruth brightened the dark ages of Israel's history. This story, it's like a breath of fresh air in the midst of all that. As Judges 21:25 says, "In those days there was no king. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And so you might think of spring break in Key West, Florida, or Mardi Gras in New Orleans, or a prison riot, or a primetimer's holiday party. I've heard the stories. So what else do we know about this book? Well, the author is unknown. Jewish tradition points to Samuel, but we don't know for sure. And we see that redemption is a very important word in Ruth. It means to buy back. And although it's not always translated as that, the Hebrew word is found, I believe, 23 times in this little book in its various forms. And while the book, it doesn't record the purpose for its writing, I believe it definitely illustrates some valuable truths, even for Christians, even for 21st century American Christians living in Missouri, sitting in a church building in Rolla. So chapter 1, Ruth comes to Bethlehem. Well, let's start here with verses 1 through 5. And I'll be reading from the NIV. I think it does a really good job with the book of Ruth. "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. Now, keep in mind, these are American pronunciations of these names. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. Well, since the book of Judges doesn't mention this famine, we don't know exactly when it occurred. Different ideas. And although famines, well, they occur naturally in this cursed earth, they are also one of the judgments which God threatened upon the Israelites for their disobedience, as we can see from the covenant of blessings and cursings, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. Now, that may have been the reason for this famine. Well, it says that they were from Bethlehem, okay, a city located about 6 miles south of Jerusalem. As you may remember, it was the birthplace of both David and Jesus, which many people are thinking about during this time of year. And they're called Ephrathites because that's the old name for Bethlehem or the area that it was in. It was Ephrathah. It's a bit ironic, but Bethlehem means house of bread. There's no bread in the house of bread, so they got to move. Now, I do not think it was very wise to take his family into a pagan country. But, you know, a man feels an obligation to provide for his family. So they moved to Moab, which is east of the Dead Sea. And the people of Moab, they were descendants of Abraham's nephew Lot, and they had a lot of problems. For example, one of their main gods at this time was Chemosh, and, well, anyway, not good. And marrying these Moabite women, it was a violation of the law of Moses. They were not allowed to have foreign wives unless the women fully converted to Judaism. See, God knew that a pagan spouse, it would not be a good influence on someone's life. Now, I think the same is true with a Christian marrying a non-Christian. It's just not a good idea. And there are plenty of examples, both in and out of the Bible, that gives the evidence for that. So they move to find bread. Well, they find graves. And it seems from the names that they gave their sons that they had been born sickly and weak. You see, Mahlon means sickly, Chilion means pining or wasting away. Maybe that had something to do with their untimely deaths. I'm sure glad we don't name our kids like that today. My name would have been Skinny Legs or something like that. Or maybe my sister's nickname for me, Noodle. But some people, they like to point out that this family, they had problems from three areas. Right? They had problems from cultural sources, living during the time of the judges. They had problems from natural forces, the famine, and having sickly children. And then problems from personal choices, you know, moving out of the promised land. Yeah, we're often affected by these as well. Usually, you just don't get all of them at the same time. All right, verses 6 through 13. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness. Have you shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me? May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." But we can see that Naomi kind of had a bad attitude there in verse 13. We'll talk about that more in a bit. But this section speaks highly of Naomi, for them to have that much love for her. And we can see that she's more concerned about their welfare than her own loneliness and her desperate situation. But the problem is, she simply had their earthly prosperity in mind. Because if she had thought more about it, she would have realized that Israel, that was the best place for them to find God. Some things are more important than earthly prosperity and comfort. Earthly prosperity and comfort, that's the reason why they moved to Moab. And look how well that turned out. But to her credit, you'll notice in verses 8 and 9 that she requested the Lord, Yahweh, and not some Moabite deity, show kindness to Ruth and Orpah. All right, verses 14 through 18. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. Well, I don't know if you remember, but this used to be read at many weddings. And, you know, although it wasn't made to her husband, and this is the kind of love and devotion that's needed in a marriage. Your God will be my God. Well, that worked out, since Naomi's God just so happened to be the only true God. Now, I'd like to think that Ruth had seen something in this Israelite family that she hadn't seen in her Moabite family. Maybe there was a noticeable difference in their faith and their love and their integrity and their morality. Well, also we know that God expects us to take care of family members. And she had come to see Naomi as that. All right, verses 19 through 22. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, can this be Naomi? Don't call me Naomi, she told them. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. You know, the beginning of the barley harvest, usually toward the end of our April. So she told them to call her Mara. Now, the name Naomi, it means pleasant or lovely. The name Mara means bitter. And maybe she thought that God had punished her family for moving to Moab and then intermarrying with them. And some ancient rabbis definitely thought that was the case when commenting on this book. But as with our lives, we can speculate. We're not always told why certain things happen. So as you know, many people, they jump to this conclusion. They jump to the conclusion, well, it's God, you see. They blame God for the bad things that happened to their lives. But you've got to remember that this is a cursed earth, as we're going to see from the fall in Genesis 3. And bad things are supposed to happen. Now, on top of that, Satan, well, he may be asking, as he did with Job, to afflict us. So we don't always know the reason. But I believe the correct attitude is to say as Habakkuk did. Though the fig tree should not blossom and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Now, no doubt that takes quite a bit of maturity. And it took Habakkuk a while before he got to that point. I mean, he started out with complaining. Look, life is hard. It's supposed to be. And I think God, yeah, he wants us to vent our frustrations to him, but I believe that's the place where we need to end up, Habakkuk 3. And so Naomi and Ruth, they settle in Bethlehem. Naomi's an old widow. And she's lost not only her husband, but her sons. And Ruth, she's a young widow. and she is a Moabitess living in a strange land. This story certainly illustrates the importance of the choices we make. Because we see Elimelech's choice to move his family to Moab, and then we see Ruth's choice to move with her mother-in-law to Bethlehem. And sometimes the choices that we make, okay, they're not necessarily between right and wrong, but between good and better. We just need to be careful. And we need to be sure to make our choices with Matthew 6:33 in mind, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Okay, chapter 2, Ruth meets Boaz, verses 1 through 7. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." Now, the custom of gleaning, collecting what's been missed by the reapers, that was a provision for the poor of the land. See, in the Old Testament, God used several welfare programs to help poor people, and one of them was to leave some of the harvest in the field for the poor to gather. You see, Leviticus 23:22. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor gather the gleaning of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am the Lord your God." Alien, speaking of a non-Israelite, not little green men, as John Wiles might imagine. So, poor people, okay, they didn't beg for handouts. They worked for what they got. Now, this is not talking about emergencies or inability, but God's idea is if anyone will not work, neither let him eat. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. Well, the men, okay, they'd cut the grain, and then the servant girls, they'd come behind and they'd bind them up into sheaves, and then Ruth could glean what they had left behind. The law allowed her to do it, but she noticed that she still asked for permission. Okay, I think this is a good attitude to have. Humility. I mean, it's so easy for people to become presumptuous and demanding of their rights. Also in this section, all right, we see the respect between Boaz and his workers. How do you treat those under your charge? It says a lot about you. Now, I think such a relationship between employer and employee, it should be imitated. I mean, read what Paul said in the New Testament to masters sometime. All right, verses 8 through 16. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you noticed me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her. Okay, it's easy for some people to get annoyed with poor people always needing help. Okay, I can understand that. But Boaz, he wasn't like that, and he didn't want his workers to be like that. He told them not to embarrass or rebuke her. See, Boaz, now in my estimation, is just a really good guy, kind, friendly spirit. So he gave her permission to continue gleaning in his field. He told his workers to treat her well. He said she could drink from the water that was for his workers. He fed her lunch, and he commanded that loose grain be intentionally left for her. Now, let's talk about Ruth. It's been said, a good reputation is the best kind of introduction. We can see that Ruth, she had already gained a good reputation. As Proverbs 22:1 says, a good name is to be more desired than great riches. Now, and again, we see her humility. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me a foreigner? Verse 10, and may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, so I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. Verse 13. Now, Lord, that's just a term of respect, kind of like sir. That's why some versions put it in all caps to specify when it's Yahweh in the Hebrew. All right, verses 17 through 23. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's fields you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Okay, take a look at verse 17. Now, threshing, that's loosening the grain from the husks and straw, often by beating it. And I've read that this is probably enough to feed her and Naomi for about 5 days. So an unusual amount for just one day's gleaning. Now, it was, of course, due to the clumsy workers. And Naomi seemed to recognize that the large amount of grain was due to a special favor. Now, I really like how she said, "The Lord bless him. He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." You see, what he was doing was also for the husbands who had died. I mean, he's honoring their memory by showing kindness to them by taking care of their widows. But we're now introduced to the concepts of a kinsman redeemer. Now, a kinsman redeemer would protect the interests of needy members of the extended family. They would do things like redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside the family, redeem a relative who had been sold into slavery, avenge the killing of a relative, the blood avenger, and marry a childless widow to raise up children in her dead husband's name. Now, something else. Notice how Ruth listened to her mother-in-law. She took her advice. See, so often, young people, they balk at the advice of their elders. It's not very wise. We need to really listen to and consider the counsel of more mature judgment. At least consider it. And the Proverbs talk a lot about that. And so in this chapter, okay, we see two examples of righteous character. We see Ruth's humility and willingness to do whatever it takes to take care of her mother-in-law. And then we see Boaz's treatment of his workers and his kindness toward Ruth, poor foreign woman in his field. The Bible has a lot to say about these traits. Humility and kindness, very important. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Philippians 2, 3 through 4, and so forth. Well, that sets the stage for the events in the next two chapters, which we're going to get into next week. And we're going to see some more just really good qualities in Ruth and Boaz. And I think that we need to remember that such character was manifested during a dark period of Israel's history. Some people believe that we may be coming on a dark period of America's history. Now, I hope not, but if that is the case, will you and I still be that salt of the earth and that light of the world? Now, another thing that we'll see in this book is that it illustrates the functions of the Hebrew kinsman redeemer, which seems to be a type or a symbol of, well, of Christ, our redeemer. And the New Testament talks a lot about redemption. We find passages like Galatians 4. But when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, in order that he might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And Titus chapter 2, looking for the blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior, Christ Jesus, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself a people for his own possession, zealous for good deeds. And so, let's always remember and thank God for our kinsman redeemer.